Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 151. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting beside me is Ken Phillips. What is up, good sir?
Hey, we're back at it again. 151, also the proof of liquor for very strong alcohol, I would say.
Yeah, that was definitely a back-in-the-day choice quite frequently. I remember one time being out with Jeremy when I had just met him for the most part. And I went to one of his friends' houses and I drank a flat back of Bacardi 151.
Ooh.
I probably had some mixer, most likely Coke, with it. But I did have a bad habit of taking shots in between, too. At the time.
Yeah, that reminded me of a time where I think I think it's just regular Bacardi that I might have helped to finish a bottle of that one evening with a friend of ours, Bill's, at the time.
Oh, yeah. That makes perfect sense.
That was a bad move on several levels. It's one of those things where I feel like I kind of was lucky to survive, so that could have went badly for me.
Yeah, it's a lot of liquor.
Yeah.
And I do remember 151 being a staple of Harry Buffalo.
Oh, right.
Because I had Everclear once, and I'm like, why is this even a thing?
Yeah, that was the other kind of, I guess, you know.
Because if you wanted to go higher in the proofage, because it was 190, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe that's correct. So that is like, since we're in the Christmas season, it's the equivalent of going from a triple or a double dare, or double dog dare maybe, to a triple dare.
Triple dog dare.
Yes.
Fair enough.
It's kind of the ultimate place you can get to, but yeah, at the time 151 was definitely also kind of seen as a somewhat of an extreme choice.
Yeah.
Back in the day, as you say. I don't know if they even still make that stuff anymore. It's been a long time since I've been shopping for it, I gotta say.
Well, the liquor in my house sits around for so long. Like, I understand now why my parents had stuff for, like, 30 years. Because, like, it's starting to be, like, 5 years for some of the stuff that we've had. Because even something that we bought this, it was a specialty of St. Martin, if I recall correctly, is a guava berry rum.
Huh.
And the wife and I have made a concerted effort to have at least a shot of it at New Year's every year.
Okay.
And I think I drank a little bit of it once we got back because I really liked the flavor of it. But we still have that sitting around, like, and I still think it'll last another couple of years before we finish it out. So we don't really do the liquor as much, and I think that that's part of the reason why it sits around. Like, I honestly don't have that many beers in general, even as much as we talk about beer these days.
Right.
It's easier to talk about when you're not completely trashed.
Yeah, it is easier to talk about most things when you're not completely trashed. I think we'll have a mixed drink every so often, but still, yeah. The alcohol does last for a long time.
Yeah, because I guess one of the recent things, and I know I posted it on the Instagram, Nocino, which is a walnut liqueur that Watershed Distillery makes.
Oh.
It's an Italian liqueur, but it goes great inside of eggnog.
Oh, that's a pro tip there for our listeners.
Yeah, if you can find, and I'm sure that there are other distilleries that make it, but I feel like the black walnut is somewhat native to Ohio and maybe the Midwest region. Like, I don't know the exact habitat. I do know that it's kind of limited.
The black walnut tree?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't realized that.
Yeah, because there's, you know, the regular walnuts are, it has a different, it obviously, like, the liqueur looks like a coffee liqueur, you know? Because it's even darker than a Kahlua or, I'm trying to think of, yeah, because it really does almost look like a stout. Like, that's how dark it is.
Yeah, Kahlua, that takes me back too. It's been a while since I've had White Russian also.
Yeah, that was still one of my horror stories that I go back to all the time, because we had the White Russian night after seeing the Big Lebowski.
Of course.
And that's when I found out that I was allergic to Kahlua.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sometime in the middle of the night, I started breaking out in welts after I probably slugged down like 4 to 6 White Russians.
Yeah, that sucks. I remember something like that happening when you, I think, realized you were allergic to Yingling in a can, not mistaken.
Yeah, Yingling in a can.
That was another unfortunate incident.
Yeah, I have some weird allergies. Like, they strike at some odd times. I have definitely not had Yingling in a can since then.
No.
Strictly bottle.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be tempting fate like that either.
Yeah, like even if it's completely fine and they've changed their, and I would almost imagine that their canning process has changed some, you know, somewhat between 20 years ago and now.
Yeah, I wonder if they've opened up any other breweries, or they just.
Well, yeah, that's why they came out here finally.
Okay.
Was because they finally found, and I don't remember exactly where it is. But they finally found a facility that they could produce it in, that they agreed with the terms.
Yeah. Well, all right. So it's probably even produced at a different plant and everything else. So.
Oh, yeah, and that could make a difference.
But I can still understand. There's really no need to suddenly embark on a habit of drinking Yingling in a can, I would say. It was never something that was, you know, we did very often, I would say.
Yeah, well, and it wasn't. Like, you're not buying that one because it's expensive.
Right.
You know, I do think that even though the cost of the glass itself is probably, you know, you could probably get cans of Yingling even cheaper, but, you know, whatever. It's Yingling. Because I don't feel like there was much can buying back in the day when I was drinking a lot of that.
I think,
you know, I feel like I've strictly, like, even before that incident, like, I feel like I just drank bottles.
Yeah, I think we were a little snobbish about looking down on, you know, drinking beer at cans for some reason.
Yeah, that was a phase. I have definitely now changed my tune on that one. It's definitely it has something to do with the product that's inside. Boy, but, like, why would I have ever guessed that?
Yeah, maybe you look beyond the thin layer of the container into the actual product itself. There's a reason, you know, Natty Ice in a can tastes bad, and it's not because of the can. that's the analogy I would use, Kevin.
You had, like, I think that was one of the reasons, like, I'm like, the only time Natty Light tastes good is when it's cold, so I always pounded it more to make sure that it was cold when I was drinking it.
Right, and that's basically, you know, numbing your taste buds so that you can't taste it. The cold, like, masks the taste.
Yeah, yeah, not really the best look. You know, I definitely let beers kind of breathe a little bit more, and if they happen to get to room temperature, it really does not bother me these days. I mean, I guess I still try to finish it when it's still relatively at least cooled off.
Right.
But, you know, if I happen to milk a beer these days, it's not a big deal at all to consume it.
Right. Some of, like, the more hoppy beers can be a little dicier for me when they get warm, I think. Because it kind of like, if it's already like a super intense taste, it kind of like enhances it more, really.
Yeah, and that's why I do kind of like it. Like, I think you can get a better sense of the hops when it when those types of beers warm up.
For sure. Maybe it brings out the, if there's an imbalance in the beer, you can definitely tell when it's warmer. You'll pick up on all the flavors there.
Wow. Impromptu topic there.
Sure, we got off on drinking
something. All because of the 151 reference to start the show off. But, I probably wanted to be drinking after the most recent Steelers game.
Yeah, that was a really frustrating game there, Kevin.
That was one where I felt like we were preparing ourselves for a loss after I looked back on our talk about being satisfied with how the season has gone and that, you know, things could go badly. And we did kind of admit that the offense is still a little bit of a hurdle for them doing anything too drastic in the playoffs. You know, unless the defense scores like two or three touchdowns.
Right.
Which, hey, I'm sure that they are capable of scoring at least one touchdown. But
yeah, I was going to say, you could maybe count on them for one touchdown this year. But which is saying, you know, crazy for a defense, I would say. But it's too much to ask for two or three touchdowns.
it's a little unreasonable.
But that's the offense was not doing well. I think part of that was, you know, the Bills actually, from what I understand, had one of the top defenses this year. Currently.
Yeah, it's kind of funny where I kind of felt like, oh, like when the Steelers played the Los Angeles Rams, the Rams have a better offense, or at least they're supposed to have a better offense than Pittsburgh. But the defense could kind of handle their offense, and then their defense couldn't handle the Steelers running the ball. So it kind of made this nice match made in heaven for like this. I think the Steelers are better off playing a offensively minded team as opposed to a defensively minded team. Like, I guess that's why I still kind of feel good. Like, if they somehow draw Baltimore in the playoffs, which I don't think they would, or at least, they wouldn't until the second round, at least.
Because Baltimore, are they locked for number one now?
No, I don't think they're locked for number one. I think they need to win this week to be locked for number one.
Okay. So we should root for them to win this week, basically. So that they'll rest their starters for the game that we end up playing at the end of the last game.
Yeah. All they need to, if they lock down this week, then they're in. Because they'd tie the Patriots for record if they lose to the Steelers, but it would be meaningless since they beat the Patriots.
Yes.
So definitely rooting for the Ravens this weekend. It will be an odd feeling. And you know, the other thing that really helped the Steelers out, because I mean, they did kind of have some things looking out for them. Everyone that was also in the playoff card hunt with them lost on Sunday too. Because Tennessee lost, Oakland lost, and I'm trying to think of who else was. Oh, the Browns lost.
Oh, okay.
You know, because they were still on the outside of the playoff picture, but I think that technically they were still in it. Even if they were like kind of the. Because I feel like there was four teams they mentioned, because it was Bills were number five and the Steelers were number six. And then they had four teams below that who were in contention, and they all lost, which kind of helped the Steelers out.
Oh, I would think so. Wow,
quite a bit.
I wonder if they would have to win both games now to kind of guarantee themselves.
The last I saw, it's still to guarantee it. They need to win both games.
Okay.
And but there are other scenarios where they just need to win one game.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because I think the other thing that doesn't help is it? I think Houston is the other team that was in the wild card hunt, and they lost this pat or no or did they win this week? Because they played they play the same team twice. Oh, Indian is it? Did they play Indianapolis? I'm glad you're looking it up. Because it was between two teams that the one is the division I think Houston is the division leader, and then whoever they played was who was close to the Steelers.
Yeah, I'm just trying to look up the playoff picture here real quick.
They played the Titans. So yeah, the Texans beat the Titans, which helped us out.
Yes. And we're ahead of we would tie break against the Titans based on our conference record.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, we would, I think in order to continue to have that record, we may need to win against the Ravens.
Yeah, to guarantee everything, if they win against the Ravens, there's nothing anyone can do. You know, okay. Yeah, two wins, they're definitely, no matter what, they're in. So, yeah, I mean, and honestly, they should beat the Jets this coming week.
Yeah, I don't think the Jets are known as a defensive team, are they?
No.
Like you were saying, I think that's true, that they do have a tougher time matching up against a defensive team.
Yeah, and the Bills were, yeah, and I guess to get back to the game in hand, yeah, the Bills are a defensive team. And I mean, I think that that's going to be more of a problem for the Steelers. Like, because should they run into Baltimore, you know, not when Baltimore's resting starters, I do think that they kind of match up pretty well with the Ravens, because the Ravens defense is better than it has been recently, I feel like. But I still don't think they're that good. So I do think that the Steelers kind of have a shot against them should they run into them. But that's, you know, again, not confirmed with all the talk there, but things are still looking fairly bright for the Steelers to get into the playoffs themselves.
Yeah, there's still hope there. If the season ended today, one of those famous sayings, because of course the season will not end today, but they would be in the playoffs. But it's still a little ways to go here to see whether that'll actually pan out or not.
Yeah, and was it just me that saw a lot of let's put Mason Rudolph back in there shenanigans after a four interception game from Duck Hodges?
Yeah, well, you know what? That was not a terrific performance by our man Duck Hodges. He may have bought into his own hype a little bit there. I'm not sure. Coaches may have bought into his hype a little bit, I think.
At least from part of it that I read is that the Bills kind of forced them to throw to the outside, which kind of, he does not have the strongest of arms.
That is the knock against him, I'd say.
Yeah, because it really is one of those things that if Rudolph could let it rip, like, because, and I think we talked about it last week, where Hodges hasn't thrown that many deep balls, but he's thrown enough to keep people honest.
Yes.
And, like, Rudolph doesn't need to throw more than, like, the 6 to 8 that Hodges is throwing.
Oh, no.
Like, they don't need to be Ben Roethlisberger-ing this thing and throwing deep, like, every third play.
Right.
You know, they can still, but, yeah, and I guess at least what I understood, too, the Bills kind of crowded the middle of the field so that he'd have to throw outside since he doesn't have a strong arm, and it worked. And I'm not surprised that you want to clog up the middle and the running, because a lot of the Steelers' stuff has been short in general without Big Ben this year.
That's true.
You know, it just seems like a smart defensive game plan in general against the Steelers.
Well, that could spell trouble going forward if other teams have noticed this, Kevin, which I cannot believe that our casual observation would be more astute than, you know, a team of professionals who are paid to notice this sort of thing.
Yeah, so. Or at least we are as astute as them. I'm sure that there are some finer points and details in there that they explain much better.
Right.
Within the war within the war.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, the broad concepts are pretty easy to pick up and point out.
Yeah.
I would think. And, yeah, I'll be interested to see how Hodges bounces back. Again, it should be somewhat of a easy task to be able to beat the Jets this coming week.
Yeah.
Should.
You never know, though. Yeah.
Yeah, you never know. That's why they play the game. It does seem like the Jets have played a little bit better recently. Like, I don't think they're world beaters, and I just took down what their record is. But
so.
Oh, yeah, they're 5-9.
Kevin, would you say there's any circumstance that you would want to put Mason Rudolph back in there?
You know, it's kind of interesting. I just think that both of the quarterbacks have their drawbacks. And it's being exacerbated still. And we've mentioned this before. The line has been, if not downright, I don't think it's been downright terrible, but it hasn't been good either. And there's definitely been some times where they, because I can think of a couple of plays where Hodges didn't even make his drop and there was someone on him already and he had to run.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of different times. And it's just like, phew, that's just concerning. Like, there's nothing that Rudolph or even Roethlisberger is going to do when the protection is that bad,
right?
You know, and that hasn't been the case all the time, and I guess that's why I'm saying that they're not, because then that's the other thing. Like, yeah, it's, they've got to play almost a flawless game to win, and when they don't play flawless, it's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, because even I was praising the special teams. And that 22-yard punt from Jordan Berry, pretty, you know, it set up the first touchdown.
Yeah, the other thing that was a little weird to me was it seemed like Buffalo was able to move down the field at points pretty well against the Steelers defense. Maybe that's just my perception of a couple drives that, you know, stood out for them being able to score, but
the defense probably did not have its best game against the Bills too. Like this was a team effort in losing.
Yeah,
I don't. The defense obviously played better than the offense or the special teams. But it still doesn't mean that they didn't. Because, you know, someone mentioned that they gave up that last drive to let the Bills go ahead 17-10.
Right.
And I feel like it was a fairly long drive, too. Like, I think that they started their 20 or 25 and drove most of the field to score.
Yeah. But they probably had a tougher time. They were probably, I don't know what the stats were, but I'm, my feeling is that they were on the field more that game than they may have been in some other games. But although they've been on the field a lot, I'd say this year in general. So I don't know.
Yeah,
if that's true.
They're kind of lucky that all those guys are young and in very good shape, except for Joe Hayden. He's pretty old. And I actually can't believe that Cam Hayward's in his 9th season now. I feel like the Steelers just drafted him, and it's his 9th year.
Jeez, yeah, I want to feel old.
Yeah, when the guy that you watched when you were young, his son is in his ninth year. Because I remember Ironhead Hayward played for Pitt. And then later New Orleans for the majority of his career. But I think he did move around after that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, his son goes to Ohio State and then is playing for the Steelers for now 9 years. That's pretty crazy to go through that life cycle of athletes. Because there are so many players that I watched or that we watched when we were younger that are having their children in sports now that it's kind of wild.
Yeah, that will make you feel old, I think.
Yeah.
I can remember starting to feel that way when right around the time I feel like Roethlisberger started playing for the Steelers. Because for me, that was like when it, probably the first time it sank in that they're like the players in the NFL were actually younger than I was at the time. So yeah, I can remember that being a big moment there, but it hasn't let up any really since then.
Because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Hines Ward is a mere couple of days older than me. I believe that we have the same birth year. I think he's just March 1st and I'm March 3rd. So yeah, like his era of players would have been like pretty much on target for our age.
Yeah.
And I feel like I remember that Tiger Woods is in our age group too.
Yeah, I think that's about right. So yeah, that was around the era that started to be weird for me. Because I can remember thinking when I was younger, like, they seem so old, you know, the players.
Oh, right.
Then to go around the other way where they're actually younger than you. So, like looking through the mirror, through the looking glass, as they say. Yeah. But, Kevin, I guess football was not the only sporting events that, you know, we could talk about that happened this week.
No, something else caught your attention.
Yeah.
And it's from the New York Times. And this is about a woman who beat a man in the darts championship in England.
Correct. The Professional Darts Corporation Championship in London.
Yeah, and this article did a terrible job of telling the story of how crazy this darts event is, because it looked like it was in an arena.
The crowd reminded me of like a cross between soccer and wrestling fans. I feel like it was
that is pretty accurate. There's a lot of cosplay. So that's why I think that you should definitely still have wrestling in there.
And the environment just seemed like a wrestling arena in a way.
Yeah, it seemed more like an octagon kind of setup, or, you know, like UFC or professional wrestling, you know, something in that vein.
So darts apparently is very big over there as a spectator sport. Because people were going nuts on the video that we watched on YouTube.
Yeah, and I want to say, and this is like not a new event. Like I thought that they had a timeline for when this began, but maybe they didn't.
All the professional adult this darts championship. Yeah, I would say this definitely is an established thing based on the amount of people. I don't think they just, like, started this.
Oh, okay, no. They did not mention in the article how long the championship has been around.
And one of the reasons I like this story was because we actually used to play darts quite a fair bit, I think, I would say.
And quite possibly when we were drinking 151.
Yes.
I mean, I did at one point. Did we ever put up the dartboard in the basement at the townhouse?
I don't remember playing it very much. But
I remember having my own darts at some point. Like, we played enough that I had darts.
You would bring them with you to the bar.
To the bar.
Yeah.
And I cannot say that I don't feel like we played 501 that much.
No, that's what I was going to say. So this championship tournament, I suppose, because this wasn't the actual championship. It was one of the steps along the way. They're all playing 501, which we played cricket. Is what we call it, what we played, right?
Yeah, we mostly played cricket, although I've got it. I feel like sometimes when they just had the electronic dart boards at the bars that we happened to frequent.
Oh, yeah.
Which were a couple of them. I feel like we were more apt to play the 501 then.
Okay.
I still think we played cricket, but... Like, I don't ever remember using my, you know, my purchased darts to play 501.
Mm-hmm. I'd say that's probably
accurate. Yeah, like, I feel like it was pretty much cricket all the time.
So, cricket, you're only aiming for certain numbers, really, most of the time.
Yeah, you're trying to go around the board.
With, like, 18... Wait, but are you hitting all the numbers? No, I can't even remember how to play cricket.
I believe so, but I think you have to hit them in order.
I felt like it was maybe some of the higher numbers you had to like you had to close out like 20, for instance. So you had to hit 3 20s, and then was it you? Oh boy, this is pretty bad.
Yeah, it's terrible. Like that. I'm not even pretending. Like I'm letting you struggle, and I'm
just
going to
say what I
up.
Think the rules are, and then you can correct me in a second here. That you had to like close out 20, say, which is like hit 3 20s, and then you can start scoring points on it. But hold on now. Now it's coming back to me because you're playing against like one other. It's like a head-to-head game, and
players take turns throwing 3 darts. To hit 15 through 20 in the bullseye.
So it was just the highest numbers then.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So
for some reason I thought that the lower numbers were involved, but... yeah, I think that all those numbers, though, are all over the board.
Right. But you still kind of, I remember getting used to, say, aiming for, like, the 18s or the 20s or, you know, well, bullseyes, obviously. But it the difference I think for 501 is that you could end up really aiming for any number, and not just that. Well, I guess first of all, the goal is to get from 501 points down to zero. By scoring points on the boards.
Yeah, and I was.
And you also the last score has to be a double. Just to finish the 501 rules there.
Yeah, and it was pretty interesting that they said that most rounds her average for the match that she won was 91.12 points per round.
That's a lot of points, I would say.
And they said that the further they go in the tournament, most people's averages are upper 90s and... possibly over 100.
Wow.
Which and I feel like you kind of did some darts highlights after that, and I feel like there was one guy that dropped triple 20s.
Oh yeah.
In his first round.
So that would be 180 points.
Right.
Yeah, that's nuts.
That's pretty bonkers.
I would feel pretty good if I got, you know, 2 triples, I would say. And that was a fairly rare occurrence. I don't believe I ever have gotten 3 triples.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't have the faith in... I would not have had that much faith in my throwing skills.
Right.
And, like, this is another one that, kind of like the video game playing, it's like, man, why don't I just keep at it? I could have been a world champion in dart throwing.
Yeah, I think we would probably had to have spent a lot more time.
To England?
Well, that too. I don't remember seeing anything like that kind of event here in the States, but I suppose it's not impossible. I forget what they said that the prize money was, but there was. I do know that the.
She had already earned £15,000 after her first.
That first round win there.
Yeah, and that she had. The women's title the previous year had been £12,000. So, like, it's an extra. And that's equivalent to $15,500. So you're probably talking like £15,000 is probably like $1,800 or so.
$18,000, yeah.
Or 18,000, yeah.
This is one that when I read that story, I was like, hold on. Like, I think for, you know, like some sports, it makes sense that there's women's and there's men's, you know, separate divisions, right?
Yeah.
Boxing.
Pretty much everything has a split.
Well,
yeah, no, I mean, honestly, most sports, there's some type of split. Like, even, you know, golfing is different.
Yes.
Or even, I feel like they mentioned, maybe it was in the article, and maybe it was in the one video that we watched, that there was a snooker player.
Oh, yeah, it was, I think, in the article.
That won, that beat a man back in 2017.
Yeah, that would be another great example there.
You know, because I guess, like, I do think the snooker is a very comparable one, because to me, I guess I don't feel like you need to use brute force in any of these to win. Like, it's definitely more of a finesse. There is some violent action, I guess, if you want to call it that, or some type of muscle needed to make sure that your dart flies properly. But if you kind of know how you throw and how to throw properly,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can refine your technique. And yeah, that was the one thing that I did find funny about the whole thing. I'm like, yeah, why hasn't a woman beaten a man before in darts? Like,
well, this is only the second year that they've allowed women to compete.
Well, yeah, and that
turns out
that's kind of a big hurdle. Having them be in there really helps out about 100%.
But in my mind, I don't understand why it's not just totally open. You know, man or woman, why only have two spots for women? You know, it should be whoever qualifies, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and they do have qualifiers.
Right.
Which is, I guess, another crazy thing, that there's a whole circuit to get qualified.
And
to be in this tournament. Yeah, you needed to be even more serious than we were, even at our most serious.
For sure. I remember having some good games, but I never felt like I could potentially become a world champion at darts.
And I forgot about that. There was this one kid that I played roller hockey with that was actually a championship dart thrower.
Oh, wow.
Like, he went out to Las Vegas to do the national finals or something.
Okay,
like that.
I could see that being a place for darts. Yeah. I don't think we mentioned her name was Fallon Chirac. She was the first woman to beat a man at the darts tournament.
Oh, yeah, that is a failure on our part.
And, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. I would say,
yeah, like, even though it's almost surprising that a woman didn't win the first year.
Well,
but you know, I mean, you still need to play pretty well. Like, I would imagine, because they mentioned that the guy that she played was 77th ranked. So there must be at least the top 100, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that would be weird to just stop at 77.
Yeah, and the guy that she was going to be taking on in the next round was number 11.
So that would probably be a tougher challenge there.
Yeah, I would imagine that he's going to average higher points.
Although I would say that, Yeah, Shirok did seem to handle her opponent pretty well, from what I could tell of the scoring. She lost two of the rounds, I think. But I think it was a best of five, maybe.
Yeah, it's a best of five. Because they said that she dropped down 1-0 and then 2-1. So she won the last two matches to win.
And those last two matches seemed like she beat him pretty well. So I don't know if what happened there, but...
in the one match, he had a chance to close it out, but he aimed high.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There was that one. That was really
close.
And
he even slapped himself on the forehead. Whoosh.
Yeah, and that's such a mental game, too. I mean, any games are mental, I suppose, but, like, this is probably the ones where it's least physically taxing, like, kind of becomes the most mentally taxing in a way.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you're kind of in your own head more, because you're not as distracted by, like, physical exertion, I think.
yeah.
So, like, darts or...
And you golf. have to wait for your turn, so you get to, like, think about it for a moment. Like, you don't have to just go back up there and do it again.
Yeah. I think curling gets it right, Kevin, because they have men and women on the same team there, right? That's probably one of the few sports.
No,
where...
they have both.
Do they?
Yeah, they had men's and women's curling at the Olympics.
I don't know if I understand
but
that.
But I think they had mixed also.
Oh, really? Okay.
But I agree with you. Like, I don't know. I guess you might be able to get a little more velocity as a man.
Well, I'm
but
not
they
sure.
don't. No one really throws it that hard, though.
Yeah, I feel like it's not like a barrier. Like, not being able to throw it hard enough is not a barrier there. Just like in darts, like it's not like people are like, she just can't throw it hard enough to stick in the board. Like, everybody seems to be able to do that. So that's not the problem. Bowling, I might say, could be another one of these sports where I feel like men and women should be able to compete pretty evenly.
Yeah, I think that's another one that's divided. But I would think that it would be pretty similar.
Because it's like, people can throw the ball hard enough to get it down to the end of the alley.
Well, and especially, I guess that's the other thing that's kind of fun. It's almost funny to say that stuff like this is kind of taken more seriously these days. Like, stuff that we used to think of screwing around, doing it while drinking and all that other fun stuff. Like, I guess I did always know that there are dart leagues around town. They're available. I never played in one, and I guess I never even got to that kind of seriousness. But I guess I was almost surprised at first that it was televised, but I'm like, man, everything's televised now. So, like, what the fuck ever? why was I even thinking? Like, I'm like, why was I even thinking that?
Yeah, I mean, disc golf is almost televised sometimes, so at least they have a YouTube channel that covers it. There's all kinds of stuff out there. You know, we may have mentioned once or twice, there's a lot of stuff to watch these days.
Options are pretty wide open.
Way too much to actually be able to watch. I don't know if that's maybe part of what's making people crazy today, Kevin. I don't know.
I guess maybe. You would think that'd just make him happier, but whatever.
True. I think having less things to watch kind of gives you a little bit more of a cohesion in some ways. Like, I remember when we were younger, everybody only watched the same few things, basically. So, like, people had a common reference point for the most part.
Yeah, we're still left out in the woods, Ken.
Yeah, that's true.
we still weren't the cool kids. Hey. Even if everyone had a group watch of, what do I want to say? I don't know why I was going to go to Mr. Ed. That's a little too old.
Well, that was something we watched on Nick at Night, I would say. Oh, yeah, Justice League, of course. G G.I. Joe, Transformers.
Transformers, yeah. I mean, especially when Transformers the movie came out.
That was a big moment, I remember.
Yeah.
That was really a rough, emotional ride there, I would say. Optimus Prime dying? I mean, come on. I did not sign up for that when I started to watch that movie. But speaking of watching movies, Kevin, maybe we got a little time here left to discuss an upcoming film that I believe you'll be seeing tomorrow.
Yeah, I am very excited to see Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker. I mean, in general, this part of the trilogy has been an uphill part after a very bad prequel series.
Oh, right.
So I'm expecting it to be at a minimum good. You know, I've done a good... I am very excited. I've pretty much stayed away from spoilers or anything of that nature.
Yeah, I feel like we're still in a window now where it's reasonable to expect to have no spoilers. And so, like, most articles are not just, like, spoiling things, you know, at all, really.
Yeah, well, I did get a couple of heads up, like, about what the Rotten Tomatoes score was. I'm like, no, get this off my phone. Like, what are you doing to me? I don't know. I don't even want the Rotten Tomatoes pushers on me. Leave me alone. I don't really care if Rotten Tomatoes...
So you're staying away from any reviews as well? You don't want to, like, have your opinion tainted by outside opinion?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the other reason to go see it on Friday.
Yeah.
There is travel for the holiday, which is going to consume the latter part of my weekend. So that's not going to be the best time, really, to go watch a 2-hour and 22-minute movie.
Right.
That one's going to take a little bit of time.
That makes sense. Yeah, we're going to be traveling this weekend as well. So, but we'll be, I think we're planning on traveling tomorrow, so won't be able to see the movie right away. But I will be curious, I think, when I watch it to, to me, like, I just have the impression from what I've been checking out a few reviews, so based on these reviews, I'd say I would want to judge for myself, but it seems like there could be a bit of a whiplash back and forth between, like, the movies that have been part of this trilogy. So, like, different kind of, like, each movie kind of went in a different direction, and seemingly without, like, an overall strong plan, kind of, like, or guideline, the first two were totally different, but I would say that the first, A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back were definitely totally different. But
right.
I'm not sure. Well, just based on what some of the reviews I had been reading, I would be kind of curious to see how that plays out. Whether it is more jarring, I guess, than the other trilogy had been.
Yeah, and I guess I'm kind of I listened to a little Unspooled today with Paul Scheer and Amy Nicholson, and they were talking about the original A New Hope version, but they did have set up their Deadpool for The Rise of Skywalker, which I thought was an interesting topic.
So what would the Deadpool be? I'm trying to... I understand it, like, normally a Deadpool is you're betting on who's going to be the first to die out of a group of people.
Right.
Is it...
Yeah, it's who... will one of the main characters die
during the movie? I see.
During the movie, I feel like Paul made a good pick in that, in and of the fact that maybe Poe Dameron is going to go down in a blaze of glory at some point. He does seem like a prime candidate to... If you're a pilot and your main job is piloting, I feel like in Star Wars you have a pretty solid chance of dying.
Yeah, it's going to be a dangerous occupation in any universe, but the fair share of pilots do get killed. Although, not usually main characters, I would say. But there are a lot of sort of semi-named
I was trying to think if Wedge Antilles ever... did he perish, or did he live through things in the original set of Star Wars?
I know I've heard that name before.
I'm kind of more familiar with...
I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because I was thinking about him, and they were talking about parts with...
I believe he made it through, Kevin. From what I'm picking up of this summary, he survived the attack on the first Death Star to become a respected veteran of Rogue Squadron, and he piloted a snowspeeder in the defense of Echo Base on Hoth, and led Red Squadron in the rebel attack on the second Death Star above Endor. So he had a he lived through all three movies there.
I mean, so some of the pilots made it through, but I do feel like pilots got picked off more than say admirals
princesses.
I mean, yeah, princesses. Han Solos,
Chewbacca's,
Wookiees, because the poor Ewoks got it.
There was no Chewbacca's who died, though. If you go back and watch those movies,
there is
zero Chewbacca's were killed.
Zero R2-D2's were killed. Zero C-3PO's were killed, although they were taken apart.
I was reading something wild the other day that apparently, according to George Lucas, the narrator of Star Wars is R2-D2, who is explaining this story, and like it's being like recorded into some kind of book or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Like long after the events have taken place.
He's kind of like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I was thinking of Lord of the Rings, where Frodo wrote down his adventures after they happened.
After the fact.
Yes.
I mean, Bilbo did the same thing. Sure. So yeah, definitely Tolkien-ish.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting and unexpected interpretation. Partly because I had never really considered before who the narrator of Star Wars was.
Yeah, and that was kind of a funny thing that they mentioned today, that I am not always the best at looking up all the factoids for some of these movies that I loved or still love. I guess I did not realize that R2-D2 was supposed to be able to speak in English, and that he was supposed to be foul-mouthed. And I've got to admit, I've always imagined him, because of the gestures that they always made R2 make when he was talking, probably like 9 times out of 10, that he was kind of foul-mouthed.
Yeah,
like, I definitely got that vibe.
Seemed to have an attitude, for sure. just thinking, imagining him kind of stomping around and...
he always seems a little upset. Surly.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. The other thing that somebody told me earlier today was, apparently George Lucas had an idea for a trilogy, for the original Star Wars trilogy, but condensed it so he put everything into one movie because he didn't think he would be able to actually make a trilogy. And that's why, they have a second Death Star that they build.
Oh.
Because originally there was just one Death Star but he kind of, put it all into one movie, just kind of shooting his load at once, I suppose.
It's kind of, you're making me think of Dragon Ball Z, where they kill off Frieza and potentially kill off the hero in the same all at the same time. And then they're like, oh, you mean we're making more seasons of this? This is super popular and I'm raking in a shit ton of money?
Right.
Oh, yeah, nope, everyone lives, everything's fine, it's cool, peoples. Let's keep on making that money.
Oh, yeah, let's keep this gravy train rolling. Similar to, I don't know if you knew this, but the author of Sherlock Holmes, Arthur Conan Doyle, I believe, he actually hated the Sherlock Holmes character and tried to kill him off at one point, but the readers basically revolted to the point where he had to find a way to bring it back.
Oh, I was unfamiliar with this.
Yeah. Oh, so it's been going on for quite a while, this sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's why I don't get bothered sometimes. It's just like, no, this stuff probably happened. We just, A, didn't hear about it nearly as much because everything was not written down and or now it's recorded and on TV.
Exactly.
That does really kind of change the dynamics of things, but I'm not sure that it really changes things that much.
Yeah, we try to think that we're living in a unique time, and I suppose we are in some ways, but in a lot of ways, there's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, same shit, different day.
Yeah.
You just get to see it now instead of going, oh, I heard that this happened somewhere. No, here you are. Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
That's right. We get to sit here and, you know, watch a darts championship that happened a continent away, you know, across an ocean.
With some crazy rowdy fans.
Oh, yeah. We must stress, these fans were...
Yeah, this is one where since I always put the video links in the write-up, then I highly suggest going to... Because, like, it's only about a four-minute clip.
That's true. They really...
And if you really are desperate for time... You can just go in there and watch, like, the first round that she wins and to see how bonkers that crowd goes, and you will get a pretty solid idea. Like, I mean, that just almost makes me want to go over there just for that championship, just to be, like, drinking and watching people throw darts.
Just it does sound because... kind of fun. Yeah, and especially being in, like, a fun atmosphere like that. And it was nice to see everybody kind of... I mean, the crowd clearly, I would say, was behind her.
Oh, yeah.
Even though...
Yeah, at times, booing the guy.
but yeah, when she would score a winning shot, like, there was, like, a fairly an eruption, I would say, of people cheering and yelling. But she did say she received a lot of negative feedback online, surprise, surprise. But at least... In the moment there, it was a pretty crazy support there.
Yeah. So
that was fun.
Oh, man. Well, Ken, we'll wrap up the show with the usual beer talk. And this is one that BrewDog, I feel like we've mentioned them somewhat recently.
I feel like I'm on a kick of getting BrewDog here.
I don't blame you. They not only do they produce a large quantity... I feel like it's always quality. Well, I shouldn't say always, because no one's always quality.
Yeah.
Well, maybe a couple. Three Floyds is pretty close to flawless. But anyway, there aren't a whole lot of others. But BrewDog punches out some good beers, and this Elvis Juice is one of their staples. It's a very good... It's fairly light drinking because I think it's only 5 point something or 6.5.
Yeah.
So it's not completely batshit heavy, but it is, you know, a smidge on the heavy side. It has a nice grapefruit flavor. I believe it won either a silver or a bronze for fruit beer at the Great American Beer Festival 2018, I believe. It wasn't this year. It was either last year or 2017.
Gotcha.
So I think that kind of goes to me to talk about the quality of this beer. And, yeah, it's never one that I'm going to turn down. We had some at the office today. I did not actually get to have one, but I would not turn it down.
No, I wouldn't recommend that our listeners turn it down either, unless you have an aversion to IPAs. But
it is kind of funny. Like, I don't think I really like grapefruit all that much, like the actual fruit itself.
It's hard to get excited about eating grapefruit for me. It's just like, you know, you're going to be in for a bit of a slog, I feel like. It's just like really sour tasting.
Yeah, and this kind of, I think the maltiness takes out a little bit of the sourness.
Yeah.
And it really helps out.
Yeah, it gives you a refreshing kind of notes there on top of all the hoppiness, I'd say.
Yeah. And they kind of distribute in a lot of places. So hopefully, depending upon where our listeners are, they can find this one, because I know that they have a place in New York now, and a couple other U.S. cities, along with spots all over the world.
Yeah, and their brewery is kind of a neat little place to stop in if you ever get a chance to. People who are in the local area, because they are their North American headquarters is in Columbus, I want to say.
Yeah, it's Canal Winchester, so. If you want to get picky.
Oh, yeah. Sure, we should get picky.
I'm going to go local, baby.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's there, and it is on our way out of town now frequently. We kind of drive past it because hitting both of the Virginia DeFrango families, we head out 33, and that's it's right off 33. It really is not hard to get to. It's a little bit of a drive, but it's not terrible. Yeah. And I feel like the food was pretty good when I tried it there.
Yeah, it is pretty decent. I like it. And then they have a nice little outdoor area there, too. So.
Yeah, in a hotel, if you really want to do that thing, if you want to bring your dog, your dog is welcome.
And I believe there's a... I had heard this. In the hotel rooms, there's a beer tap in the shower. So that's pretty exciting.
God bless the USA. I'm at DeFrango 11. He's at Gozer 33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
We'll see you.